Good morning, everybody. As most of us, I'm torn just like everybody else. Most probably the last 48 or so hours have been the most difficult that we have experienced in all the years that we have been in Eretz Yisrael. I certainly say that for myself, and I'm sure all of you feel so as well. You will see as the shiur proceeds that I had an even greater difficulty. This was a shiur that I had prepared well before the tragedy of Motzei Shabbos. I had been working on it for a while. And then I thought to myself yesterday, maybe I shouldn't say it. Maybe I shouldn't say it. In the present atmosphere and environment, it would not be understood. And then I said to myself, but wait a minute, I'm learning pure Torah, and I am going to express pure Torah. Am I going to be frightened of expressing myself? Does the profound tragedy mean, therefore, that all legitimate debate is over and done with? And if anything, I became more convinced as I was driving here this morning and was listening to the radio. So somebody calls in, or somebody's interviewing Shitrit, says that charges or investigation should be made of all of those rabbis. And then he specified the ones who called for Siruf Pikuda, to refuse orders. In other words, we are all guilty. We are all guilty. All guilty. The fact is that it began on TV most probably within an hour of the profound tragedy. I'm afraid the accusations, who carries and bears the responsibility of the guilt. Personally, as far as I'm concerned, Amos, the Navi Amos, made a very, very powerful statement. Vahamaskil, the intelligent person, Vaesahi Yidam, at that time, to remain silent. There has to be a period of silence. There has to be a period of time during which we sort of go into ourselves. Because there are so many ways to look at this, and I think that it's going to be necessary to hear and to listen and to talk and to feel, and maybe just to be silent and find the ways and means by which to attempt in some way, I don't know, to heal. I don't think that the atmosphere is right for that. Maybe I'm wrong, and I hope that I'm wrong. The fact is and remains, this country was legitimately and is legitimately divided. And because of a terrible tragedy of this sort does not mean because of a psychopathic bullet that is shot. Therefore, what half the country or more stands for all of these years all of a sudden has disappeared in a shot. Can't be. If anything, you know what, last night, I don't know why I remembered last night, when I came on Aliyah in the first few years that I was here, maybe even less, I was extremely shocked and upset by the scenes that were usually shown of debate in the Knesset. I don't know, in the United States Congress or Senate, we never experienced that kind of debate. I read columnists in the Hebrew newspapers where they will want to go ahead and, as they do up until today, not necessarily deal with issues or attack, but they attack people. Now, this was something that in the first few years I was here was something that shocked me. No end. Nicht as a schreiben, this is not the way you write, this is not the way you speak. There's a certain, even members of Congress and Senate who can despise each other terribly, but in the way in which they express themselves, you have to express yourself with dignity. That's not the debate in this country amongst its leadership has never been very cultured. And I'm afraid that we got used to that here as well. Which means that whatever may be necessary over here, it may be an entire revamping of the attitudes of an entire country. But to go ahead and begin to place blame on any particular segment of the community as though they and exclusive they are guilty, and that therefore honest expression of positions and opinions is to be rejected, can't be. That would be crushing and destroying all legitimate debate and democracy. We can't do that. Democracy is not supposed to die as a result of that bullet. And when one member of the government says we have to crush them, this is the kind of these are the kind of statements that have to be made now. That's much better if we would just remain silent and think things out. We are calling think tank meetings of our rabbinic leadership, and we're going to sit and think and debate and discuss. And we're not going to come out with any quick, instantaneous decisions as what has to be done, because over here, if only one half the country is going to be ready for to at least find a way to live with the other half, it's not going to work. It has to be both halves of the country that want to live with one another. And the fact is that the debate that's been going on for the past 3 years has really been a debate that has been at the heart of the entire return to Eretz Yisrael. I mean, this didn't start today. The struggle between right and left in the 30s, in the 20s, the struggle between the religious and the non-religious is a struggle that goes back to the beginning of the century and before. There are deep divisions here, extremely deep divisions. What's amazing is that something of this sort didn't happen earlier. It had to wait 100 years for a Meshuggah, clearly certified Meshuggah, to throw us into this kind of terrible confusion. I even feel, it's even terrible that we have to condemn. I remember, the fact is we have condemned these things in the past, but just the fact that we have to condemn it as though one would assume that we condone murder. As though we condone murder. Lo Tirzach is Lo Tirzach. That's all. It's been a trauma for the Jewish people, and I'm going to say the shiur that I have prepared anyway. How do you like that? And you'll see exactly by the end of the shiur exactly what I have in mind. The shiur that was prepared, something that I've been working on before, and I'm going to say it, and it's going to be as I had prepared it, and that's it. Now you'll see what it's all about. And I'll tell to you with precisely all of the intention that I had when I prepared the shiur. Precisely. I really wanted to talk about the first pasuk in the Akedah. Vayihi achar hadvarim v'ayla. It's in Bereishis. First pasuk of chapter 22. And it came to pass after these things, for Elokim nisayet Avraham, and God, for the moment, we're going to say that the word nisa means tested. I said, for the moment, came to pass after these things, and God tested Avraham, vayomer elav, and he said to him, Avraham, vayomer, and Avraham said, hineni, here I am. Achar Hadvarim Ha'ela, says Rashi. After what? After what? Says Rashi, Yesh mi rabbeinu omrim, there are some of our rabbis who say, Achar Dvarav Shel Satan, after the words of Satan, Shahayom Katreg Va'omer. He condemned Avraham. He had the strong complaints against him. He prosecuted Avraham before God. Va'omer. And the Satan said, I'm reading Rashi, Mikol Suda Sha'os Avraham Lo Hikri Lefanecha Par Echad Oy Ayel Echad. The Suda, the great Suda that Avraham made, he didn't bring one cow or one ram before you. Which Suda are we talking about? We'll see in a moment. Oh, let's see in a moment. Amalo. So God said to Satan, Klum Osa Ela B'Shvil Bino. He did it only for his son. Ilu Hayiti Omelo Zavachot Olafanai. If I would say to him, sacrifice him before me, Lo Hayom Akev, he would not stand in the way. He'll do it. So it could very well have been the Seudat Brit Mila. Earlier, the parasha said there was a. He made earlier, huh?
He made two sudas.
Yeah, well, he made a suda for the Brit Mila, and then Biyom Higamel at Yitzchak, when Yitzchak grew up. That was back in chapter 21, Pasuk 8. Vayigdal Hayeled, Vayigamal. The child grew up. And he was weaned. Vayas Avram Mishter Gadol. Avram made a big party beyond Higamel at Yitzchak on the day that Yitzchak was weaned. So when Rashi uses the word Mishter, the Satan uses the word Mishter, it means it was a big party. And Avram, Satan complains. Take a look. He didn't bring anything before you. So God says, all that he did was for his son. I will show you that even if I ask of him his son, he will not withhold it. V'yeshamrim. Rashi says there's another. There are those who say, Achad Dvorov Shel Yishmael. After the words of Yishmael, Shahayom Et Pa'er Al Yitzchak. Yishmael was the one who sort of felt that he is greater than Yitzchak. He prided himself, Shemal Ben Yudgimul Shon of Alomicha. He was circumcised when he was 13 years old and he didn't object. Yitzchak, how can that compare to the fact that you were circumcised when you were 8 days old, so that it was not even in your power to object, but I willingly accepted Brit Milah when I was 13 years old. Amalo Yitzchak. So Yitzchak told him, Be'evet echad ato miyad eini. You want me to be frightened of your great self-sacrifice that was part of one organ of your body? Amali HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Zavach Atzmecha, if God would say to me, slaughter yourself, give your entire life up, Lo Hayiti Ma'akev, I would not withhold it. Alright. Achar Hadvarim Ha'ela. Rashi had said it in Parashat Lech Lecha, and I believe we learned that Rashi last week. Vahi achar hadvarim ha'ela, and it came to pass after these things, and God appeared to Avraham in a vision. Says Rashi, wherever it says achar means immediately afterwards. One event follows in sequence after the other. Where it says acharei, it means much later. Vahi acharei hadvarim would mean much later in time. Which brings me really to what I want to learn today. There, it was planned as to demonstrate the difference between Rashi and his einikel, the Rashbam. Rashi had an einikel called the Rashbam, Rav Shmuel ben Meir. He was the son of Rashi's son-in-law. Rav Meir was Rashi's son-in-law. The Rashbam's approach to Torah in general is different than that of his Zayda Rashi. While Rashi, at the beginning of Torah, says a number of times V'ani lo bati ela lefaresh pshuto shel mikra. I have come only to explain pshuto shel mikra, the meaning of the words in the pasuk. The fact is that Rashi, in great measure, bases his perush, his commentary on Chumash. In Chumash, he bases it on Torah Shebaal Peh, on the oral law, on the Medrash. Take a look at how Rashi just explained Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ela, and it came to pass after these things. Number one, Rashi is not saying that it follows immediately on the heels of what was said immediately before in the Torah. Rashi doesn't say that. If anything, Rashi says Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ela refers to two things that don't even appear in Torah altogether. The Rashi's pshat on Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ela is referring completely to one of two possibilities, neither which appears in Torah. One is the Medrash about Satan coming before God and complaining, take a look, Yitzchak Avram didn't bring a single sacrifice before you, he makes himself a grace party over there, doesn't bring a single sacrifice. And the second shot of Rashi is some kind of a conversation that Chazal, the rabbis tell us, took place between Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yitzchak saying, listen, I had bris milah when I was 13, where does that compare to your having a bris milah at 8 days old? Which means there's a problem in the Rashi. The problem, certainly as the Rashbam sees it, there is a problem in the Rashi. Problem in the Rashi is, first of all, that the Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ela does not follow on the heels of anything that's said in the Torah. And second, it's completely based not on pshuto shel mikra, what the pasuk would be telling us, but we have to bring medrashim from elsewhere. There are a number of places in Torah where the Rashbam outlines what his basic approach is. I just want to read from two or three places in the Rashbam. He says, Yedu v'yovinu yodei seichel, let them know and understand, people of intelligence. But I did not come in my commentary to Torah, I didn't come to explain the laws. Afal pi she'ein ikar, though they are the most important part of Torah. Kemosha pidashti b'bereishit, at the beginning of Bereishit, I said this, obviously the purpose of Torah is law, and the law ultimately is the truth of Torah. Ki miyitur hamikraot nishmain ha-hagadot v'ha-halachot, u'miktzatan yimtzu b'perusho Rabbeinu Shlomo avi imi. The fact is that many psukim are explained by the oral law, by the Medrash and the Gemara and Torah, and some of them are brought in the commentary of our Rebbe Shlomo avi imi, the father of my mother. He's talking about his Veda. Vani lefareif pshuton shel mikraot vadi, I came in order to explain the simple textual meaning of the pasuk. In other words, a pasuk can be understood on many levels. There are many levels. One is, of course, the level that my Zayde Rashi, the great commentator of Torah, does. But there's also the simple meaning of the psukim. I shouldn't use the word simple. That's a very bad word. I take it back. One has to be careful with their words. I'm not sure if there is any translation for pshuto shel mikra, except maybe the literal meaning of the pasuk. There is, in other words, it means that the Rashbam is saying that there is one level by which we understand Torah through the literal meaning of the pasuk. In addition to that, there are other levels, the level of Medrash, the level of Halacha, all that is brought in Torah Shebaal Peh. That one can go further and see that there are levels of Remez and Drush and Sod, secrets of Torah. He does in, I believe, what should be a famous Rashbam, at the beginning of Parashat Vayeshev, he says the following, V'gam Rabbeinu Shlomo Avi Imi, our Rebbe Rashi, the father of my mother, Meir Einei Gola, who lightened the eyes of the entire
diaspora, the entire exile. It means that the Einikel already knew that the Zayda Rashi was the great commentator of Torah. Without Rashi, we can't make our way through Torah at all. Rashi is the great commentator. V'gam Rabbeinu Shlom Avi Imi Meir Einei Gola Shepidesh Torah Nevi'im Uktuvim. My Zayda also, he wrote a perush on Torah Nevi'im Uktuvim. Natan Lev, his intention was Lefadesh Pshuto Shel Mikra, to explain the literal meaning of the pasuk. V'afani, also I, Shmuel Dechav Meir Chasano, Shmuel, the son of Meir, his son, Meir was his son-in-law. Nitvakachti imo. This is beautiful. He says, I debated with my Zayda. You understand? He says, I discussed this with my Zayda Ulefanov, and in his presence, Bahodali, and he agreed with me. She'ilu hayalo pnai, would he have time? Hayatzarech lasot peirushim chadashim lefi hapashtut hamitchadshim b'chol yom. If he would have time, he would have to write another commentary in Torah that would be in light of a commentary that would understand Torah on the basis of new events or new discoveries. That's a very dangerous sentence, and one has to understand it. And of course, the Rashban has explained in a number of places, never do we mean that we are talking outside of the realm of halacha. But the fact is that events and why is there why do rabbis and laymen speak about Parashat Hashavuot? Because in Sodan and Kabbalah we're told that there's some kind of a relationship always between Parashat Hashavuot and what happens during the course of the week, and it's the genius, the divine genius of Torah, that there's always a way of finding some real meaning or some kind of a commentary to the events on the basis of studying Parashat Hashavuot. And I think that we have demonstrated that here over the last few years many times. So now I'm going to get to the Rashbam that I wanted to learn with you. The Rashbam, and maybe we'll learn a few psukim. Let's go back before the Akedah. Pasuk 22 in chapter 21. Pasuk 22. Vayehi ba'etahi. And it came to pass at that time, Vayomer Avimelech, Ufichol Sartzvo Avimelech, and Fichol his commander in chief, El Avraham Lema to Avram, saying, Elokim imcha bechol asher ata oseh. God is with you in all that you do. V'apa now, he shovali be'elokim heina. I want you to swear to me through God, im tishkar li, that you should never lie to me, ulenini ulenerdi, and to my children and grandchildren. Kachesed asher asiti imcha ta'aseh imadi, the kindness that I did with you, ta'aseh imadi, you shall do with me, v'im ha'aretz, and with the land, asher kartaba, with the land in which you live. It seems that our Avimelech, who is king of Plishtim, wants a treaty with Avram. Vayomer Avram, Avram said, Anochi Yishavea, I will make an oath to you. And the pasuk goes on to say, V'hochiach Avraham et Avimelech al odot be'er amayim. Avraham called Avimelech to account with regard to the well of water which the servants of Avimelech had violently taken away. V'hochiach Avraham et Avimelech al odot be'er hamayim asher gozlu avdei Avimelech, the servants of Avimelech had stolen it and taken it. V'yomer Avimelech, Avimelech said, and there sort of seems to be a little bit too much of protestation in this pasuk. Avimelech said, lo yadati, I didn't know, mi asar ta davar hazeh, who did this? V'gamata, lo higatata li, you didn't tell me. V'gamanochi, lo shamati, bilti ayom, I didn't hear until today. I don't know anything. There he protests a little bit too much. Vayikach Avraham, son of Bakar, Avraham took sheep and cattle, vayitem Avimelech, and he gave it to Avimelech, vayichlu to shnei brit, and the two of them made a covenant. Vayatzev Avraham et shevet kivsot hatzol avahen, Avraham set aside seven sheep. Vayomer Avimelech al Avraham, and Avimelech said to Avraham, ma heino, what are these seven sheep? Sheva kvasot ha'elu, asher hitzavto levadena, what are these that you set aside alone? Vayomer,
You shall take 7 sheep from me, so that this should bear testimony that I dug this well. Therefore, the place was called Be'er Sheva, the well. The Sheva could either be for the Sheva Kivsot Hatzon, the 7 sheep, or for the fact that they took an oath. Ki Nishbu Shneim, because both of them took an oath. Vayitu to Brit to Be'er Sheva, and they made a covenant in Be'er Sheva, Vayokam Avimelech, Ufichol Sarzor Avimelech, and Fichol, his commander in chief, got up, Vayoshuf Valeritz Plishtim, and they returned to the land of Plishtim. Vayita Eishel to Be'er Sheva, and Avram planted an Eishel in Be'er Sheva, and Rashi, of course, brings the 2 Pshatim. One was, indeed, it was an orchard that he planted, and the other Pshat that Rashi says is, Vayita Eishel, he made a way station, a hotel, a motel, because the word Vayita can also be used to plant a tent, because a tent is placed into the ground, and this was a place that people can come. Vayikra Shon B'Shem Hashem Kelelam, and there he called, he brought the message of the eternal God. People would come through, and the message would be the message of Kelelam. Vayagar Avram, that is Plishtim Yom Rav, and Avram lived in the land of Plishtim for many days. So now I come to the Rashba. I'm going to say it. Vayini Achar Advarim Ha'ela. Says the Rashbam. Says the Rashbam the following, and he makes his case very carefully, and his case, of course, is going to be built to begin with on pshuto shel mikra, the literal meaning of the pasuk. Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ele, and it came to pass after these things, must mean that the parsha of the Akedah flows naturally from the parsha before. So first he begins by establishing the principle, kol makom shenema achar hadvarim ha'ela, wherever it says, after these things, mechubar al ha'parsha shalamala, it is connected to the parsha that comes before. He is already disagreeing now with his Zeder. And he brings a number of proofs. Achar hadvarim ha'ela, the one that we learned last week, after these things, shahorag avram et hamalachim, that Avram had killed and destroyed the 4 superpowers of the day. God appears to him in a vision and he tells him, Al tira Avram, don't be afraid. So one follows, parasha 2 follows directly from the parasha before. Al tira Avram in homos, don't be afraid of the nations of the world. Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ela, and it came to pass after these things, there's going to be vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ela at the end of the parasha of the Akedah. At the end of the parasha of the Maftir. Interestingly enough, there in our Chumash it says Vayihi Acharei Hadvarim Ha'ela. Acharei could be not quite immediately afterwards. Says the Rashbam, Vayugad Lavron Lemar. Oh, Avram was also told Ubetuel Yola de Rivka, that the Tuel gave birth to Rivka. V'chein Achar Hadvarim Ha'ela. In the 3rd chapter of Megillat Esther, it says, "Achar hadvarim ha'ele, after these things, Gidal hamelech Achashverosh et Haman ben Hamdasa, the rise, the meteoric rise to power of Haman, followed immediately on the heels of what? What happened at the end of the 2nd chapter in the Megillah? At the end of the 2nd chapter in the Megillah, there was a plot, the plot of Bigson the Seresh, to assassinate Achashverosh, and it was Mordechai who revealed, uncovered the plot. So the Rashbam says, obviously, bringing Haman to power was the direct result of the threat that Achashverosh felt to his life. So that one follows immediately after the other. Afkan, here also, Achar Hadvarim, after these things, Shekarat Avraham Brit L'Avimelech, Lo Ulenino Ulenechdo Shel Avraham, after the covenant that was entered into between Avraham and his children and his grandchildren, 4 and great-grandchildren, the same covenant, and he makes a covenant with Avimelech, v'natan lo sheva kivsot atzon, and he gave him 7 sheep, says the Rashbam, The anger of God was kindled against Avraham for this. Why? Shahadei Eretz Plishtim Bechlau Gvul Yisrael, because the land of Plishtim is within the boundaries that God gave to Avraham. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tziva Aleihem, and God had commanded about all the people who live within the boundaries of biblical Eretz Yisrael, Lo Techaya Kol Neshama, you shall not permit anyone to remain alive. And that this was supposed to be done by Yoshua. The Gambi Yoshua, in Yoshua itself, Matilin al Ore Chameshet Sarne Plishtim Goro, the five cities of Plishtim are divided as part of the inheritance of the Jewish people. So he says that immediately following the covenant that was entered into between Avraham and Avimelech, God was angry with this, because what he is doing over here, it can be one of two things, or both, that he is making a treaty with Avimelech, and that he is giving away Eretz Yisrael. And he can't do that, so God gets angry with him. V'Elokim Nisa et Avraham. Elokim Nisa et Avraham. Here also, so first of all, what do we see? The Rashbam is basing his shot on Pshuto Shel Mikra. Vayihi Achar, something following something means that it must be related to the parasha immediately preceding it. What is he going to do now with the words Voha Elokim Nisa et Avraham? We always understood Nisa Avraham as meaning he tested him. What kind of test is this? So he says, no, it means something else. The word Nisa means that he caused him pain, tribulation. You know, there's testing and there's trying and testing. Even in English, to try and to test somebody is to cause one pain. V'Elokim Nisat Avraham, says the Rashbam, Kintero V'Tziaro, he troubled him and caused him pain. Kidiksiv, and the word Naso, Nun, Samet, Hey, does appear in Torah a number of fine times, meaning to trial, to cause suffering. First of all, it says by Eov, Hanisa Daber Elecha Tilah, if we talk to you, is this going to hurt you? Al Nasotam et Hashem, God got angry, Al Nasotam et Hashem, that they had caused pain, to God. Maso Umeriva, Bechoneini Hashem, V'Nasani, God, test me and try me. Kloma. And here the Rashbam now has to deal with another question. The question that the Rashbam has to deal with is, in what way is the Akedah a response to the fact that Avraham had agreed to relinquish the rights to parts of Eretz Yisrael? Not in eternity, by the way, but only for four generations. Not in eternity. The question is when these generations begin, when they end. That's a separate question. But he says, so now what's the measure for measure? In what way is God acting with judgment toward Avraham?
Why does
Let me say the following. According to most of the Mepharshim, not all of the Mepharshim, our use of Nin as a grandchild was all wrong. Some say great grandchild and some say child. Some say child. So I'm telling you, the question of what the meaning of Nin and Neched is open to a great deal of discussion. So that what we may, the way in which we may be using it in modern Hebrew is not necessarily correct. But alright, that's it. Be that as it may, what we're talking about is an agreement that is made over a number of generations.
How do we know there's four generations?
Nin and Neched, it's an agreement between me and my children and your children and your grandchildren. And I say, according to some, it means even great-grandchildren. So it's four generations, or whatever it is. The fact is that this is going to be brought by Rashi himself many times. And we're going to see, for example, the unusual character of a Shimshon HaGibar. Shimshon HaGibar is so different than any other character that we have in all of Tanakh. There is no one else who is graced with great strength. And what is the task of Shimshon HaGibor in his lifetime? Only one. His task is to be one individual who wages war with the Plishtim, who are the great, great, whatever, children of Avimelech. And the Mefarshim all explain that Rashi says it, because the Jewish people cannot go out to battle against Plishtim, because they're still the covenant, and we can't break a covenant. They're still the covenant of Avraham with Avimelech. But an individual Jew can begin the process of waging war with Plishtim. And therefore God graces one man with tremendous strength so that he should be able to carry on a private war. That's the whole story of what Shimshon is all about. But wait. The Rajban has to explain, how is the Akedah a response to God's anger with Avram because Avram has given away something that was not his to give away? Says the Rajban, Kloma, this is what it means. Nidga'eta beben shenetaticha. You are full of pride about the son that I gave you, lichrod brit, and therefore that led you to make a covenant beinechem ubein beinehem, between them and their children. Ve'ata, now, all of your pride comes because now you're a tata and you have a child, and therefore you now enter into all sorts of agreements on behalf of you, your children, his children, their children. Ve'ata leich v'ha'aleu la'ola, now go and bring him as an ola. And we will see. Now we're going to see whether your covenant has any meaning or any force. I'm going to tell you to take that son and bring him as an ola. What's interesting, of course, is I have a feeling that even the Rajbam was a bit taken aback by the way in which he understands these words, Vayihi Achar Advadim Ha'ela Ve'elokim Nisa Et Avraham. So he has done two things with two of these words, Achar, and he's most probably right that there has to be a relationship between that which is said here and that which was said immediately before. He has also taken the word Nisa, and from test he has turned the word Nisa into to try, and to hurt, and to hurt and to cause pain. He most probably also knows that he has taken the Akedah, and the Akedah becomes not only the great passion of Avraham, the great means by which Avraham shows his absolute love for God, but on some level it would seem as though slightly the Akedah is diminished by virtue of the fact that the Akedah now is punishment. That's what it is. So even the Rajbam knows he needs support. He needs something that's going to support his position. And of all things, he finds his support in a medrash. And the medrash says the following. V'chein matzati achareichein. I even like the way he writes it. I found afterwards. In other words, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but all right, listen. I don't know whether we will ever make this tape public anyway. V'chein matzati achareichein. I found afterwards. That means, first of all, it means that I believe what he means is that he's reading Pshuto Shel Mikra, and that the Pshuto Shel Mikra, the literal meaning of the pasuk, is that which is guiding him. And then he finds also that even the Medrash is a source of support for his position. The Medrash in Shmuel says the following: Vayehi Aron Hashem, the Ark of God was in the land of Plishtim for 7 months. This is when, after Mishkan Shiloh is destroyed at the beginning of Shmuel, and Chofni and Pinchas, the children of Eli, are killed, and the ark is taken into captivity by Plishtim. The ark was there for 7 months. Says the Medrash the following on that pasuk: Et sheva kivsot hatzon tikach liadi. Avraham said, "Take the 7 sheep from me." Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said, "Ata natatolo sheva kvasot." You gave Avimelech 7 sheep. Chayecha, I swear.
Shebonav osim sheva mulchamot im banecha venotzchin otan. His children are going to wage seven wars against you, and they're going to be victorious in seven wars against the Jewish people. Tavaracha. And number two, Chayecha, I swear, this is God speaking to Avram. Shebonav horgim sheva tzadikim ibanecha. His children are going to kill seven of your great tzadikim from your children. Ve'elu hein. And who are the seven tzadikim? Shimshon, Chofni, Pinchas, Shaul, and his three children. Chofni and Pinchas, the children of Eli, were killed in battle by Plishtim. It's right there in the... Seven tzaddikim are going to fall in battle with them. Tavaracha. A third pshat the Medrash says, Chayecha, I swear, Shebonav machrifim sheva mishkanot. His children, the Plishtim, are going to destroy, seven of your dwelling places, temples, the Mishkan, the Eluhain, Ohel Moed, Gilgal, Nov, Shiloh, Givon, and two Batei Mikdash, a total of seven, are going to be destroyed because of this. Dabaracha, Sha'aron, Machazir, Bisdei Plishtim, Shiva Chadashim. Another pshat, and this is the pasuk that he began with, that the Aron is going to be held captive. You understand? The Ark is going to be held captive by Plishtim for 7 months. For 7 months. All right. Let's begin a summation of the words of the Rashbam, and then we're going to have to see what we have to develop the idea further. So, number one. The Akedah, according to the Rashbam, is punishment. Different than all of the other Mepharshim, except I take that back. It's not all of the Mepharshim. A number of the Mepharshim take the position taken by the Rashbam. You have it in the Chizkuni and a number of other places where they either say precisely the same thing or they quote the Rashbam. I mean, the word Nisa does not mean to test, but to try. That's, of course, in a certain sense, that's difficult, because this is supposed to be one of the Asara Nisyonot, one of the 10 tests by which Avraham was tested. Achar Hadvarim Ha'ela, of course, means following immediately upon the heels of that which was said before. There are Medrashim that seem to say otherwise. I'll read just part of the Medrash. There is a Medrash Eliyahu Rabbah that says, Lachain Yishmar Adam Dvarim Belibo. A man should keep words in his heart. Maybe he says that one should not say everything that one wants to say. And as we said at the very beginning of this year, that this is a time at which we certain things had better not be said. Some things had better not be said. So the Medrash goes on to say, Shelo yaseh shutves dvodim im akum. This is the Medrash Eliyahu Rabbah says a person should not make a treaty of words with an akum, with a goy, velo yichrot im obrit, and not make a covenant with him. Shekei motzinu b'avroh avinu. So we find with Avraham, she also shutves im avimelech. He made a partnership with him, and the end was that the partnership led to a treaty. They both made a covenant. Listen to the words of the Medrash. When he made the covenant with Avimelech, the angels of heaven gathered before God for Amru, and they said, Loma yichrot Avraham. Why is Avraham making a covenant with this guy? The one man who you chose from 70 different nations and tongues. You chose him from all of them. Why is he making a covenant? That one son that I gave him at 100 years old, I'm the Omelola. Follow my word, that his intention was good, Mipnei Darkei Shalom, because he wanted to make peace with
Avimelech.
V'im lav, and if not, Yofa Omdim. But you'll see that this is not what the Medrash is. This is not what the Medrash is saying. We'll just wait a moment. Shenama Vayihi Achar Dvorim Ha'ele V'Lekim Nisat Avram Mikan Omru. From here they said. Now listen to this. Ein l'cho umo ba'olam she'eino mishabedet umma'anim et Yisrael yoter mikama meyot shanim. There is no nation or tongue upon the face of this earth that causes suffering to the Jewish people for more than a few hundred years. Ela b'shvil shekarat Avraham b'ritim ha'akum, because Avraham made a covenant with this nation, we suffer from them more than we have suffered from any other people. U'mosed et bonav l'cherev, Jews will fall by the sword. U'maglo tami arzo, and he will send them into exile out of their country. I have a lot to say. Let me maybe take a little jump from the Rashbam to a very, very fascinating, disturbing, troubling statement by the Gra, Hagaon Mivilna, and it happens to be a piece in the Gra that for some reason had been removed by the censors from his Perush on Habakkuk and was found in our days, just as there are many other statements of the Gra that we were Vilna Gaon that we were unaware of, and many of them are prophetic or certainly with great Ruach HaKodesh. It says the following. We say it every day. We say the Oz Yosher every day in our davening. Toward the end of Oz Yosher it says Chil Ochaz Yoshvei Ploshet. Trembling took hold of the residents of Plishtim. Oz Nivhalu Elufei Edom. The officers of Edom became confused. Ele Moav, the mighty ones of Moav, Yochazemu Ra'ab, were taken with shaking and trembling. Says the Gra the following, listen carefully to his words. Ele Hashlosha, there are three nations that are mentioned here. The three nations that are mentioned here are Plishtim, Edom, and Moav. Now remember also, this was written more than 200 years ago by the Gra. Says the following. Ela hashlosha him shlosha meitzranim shel Eretz Yisrael. These three are the three who border on Eretz Yisrael. Shlosha meitzranim shel Eretz Yisrael. Moav mi mizrach, Moav to the east. Edom mi darom, Edom from the south. Plishtim mi ma'arav, and Plishtim to the west. The western southern coastal plain. Moav. Moav represents the defilement by which the Jewish people were defiled. What's the classic story about Moav at the end of Parashat Balak, that the Shevet Shimon Jews began to follow the daughters of Moav, the terrible story of Zimri and Cosby. They defiled the Jewish people. Edom, Uavot HaNezikin. Edom is the one who has caused more suffering, damage, harm, hurt. Shehiziku Yisrael biyoteh, they are the ones who caused us more damage than any other. Edom, of course, represents in Chazal, that's Rome. Rome then becomes the Christian world, and that's what's represented by Edom. Uplishtim. Plishtim, the Vilna Gaon says, they were the ones who caused the greatest amount of suffering to the Jewish people. They did not permit. They tried to stop Jews from establishing a government and a sovereign state. This is unbelievable. Watch what the Vilna Gaon is going to say. He says, he's going to say that throughout history, there's one people who will do anything in their power to make certain that Jews will not have memshalah v'shilton, government and sovereignty. And the fact is, we're going to see it throughout Tanakh. This is very fascinating. This is very fascinating. Now remember, again remember, this shiur was prepared a week or two ago. If I don't start preparing a week or two earlier, I'll never catch up with myself. And the fact is, there are some weeks when I can't catch up with myself, and bright and early Tuesday morning, I'm still working on this year, which is not the way it should be done. Now listen, there is something in Torah itself very fascinating about Plishtim. Where do Plishtim first appear in Torah? Something so unusual. So unusual about how Plishtim are mentioned. Plishtim appear for the first time in Parashat Noach. You don't have to look there. I'll read the pasuk. They are describing the children of Shem, Ham, Yafet, in the middle of the children of Ham. I'll just read a few psukim so you'll see the style of Torah writing, and then all of a sudden there's a dramatic change of style. The children of Ham, Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, Knan, the sons of Cush, Sva, Chavila, Safta, Rama, Satcha. Okay. Cush gave birth to Nimrod. And then Nineveh, he builds Nineveh, and then we, so that we go, we're going through the children of Ham. Then it comes to Mitzrayim. Umitzrayim yolad et Ludim vet Anamim vet Lahavim vet Naphtuchim. Mitzrayim gave birth to these four: Ludim, Anamim, Lahavim, and Naphtuchim. Still, everything is following a normal style. This one gave birth to that one, that one, that one, that one, and that one. And he also gave birth to Patrusim and Kasluchim, Asher Yotzu Mishom Plishtim. From them came out Plishtim. This is the one place in Bereshit and Noach, in all of the listings of the nations that are born, the only place where the style changes dramatically. Well, why doesn't it simply continue to say that he gave birth to Patrusim, Kasluchim, Plishtim, Kaftorim? No, stops by Plishtim and says that from Patrusim and Kasluchim, from them came out Plishtim. Why this dramatic change of style? So Rashi, of course, notices it. Of course, Rashi takes note of it. And Rashi makes a statement. Plishtim, Yotzu Mishneim, came from the two who preceded, who were Patrusim and Kasluchim. Shehayu Patrusim v'Kasluchim machlifin mishkav nishoteim. They were an immoral people who exchanged wives. And from that miserable mixture of Patrusim and Kasluchim comes out Plishtim. Say symbolically, it means a people or a family that doesn't really have a pedigree or a heritage. We don't even know where they come from. We don't know whether they're Patrusim or they're Kasluchim. Rashi noticed that there was a change over here in the way it is expressed. Rashi took note of it immediately. Which means there... I'll just say what's on my... There's something illegitimate about Plishtim. There's something illegitimate about Plishtim. Why am I saying something? Plishtim are illegitimate. That's what the pasuk is saying. We don't know who the mam is. We know who the mam is. We don't know who the tat is. We don't know whether they're Patrusim or Kasluchim, so they became Plishtim. They are different than the normal order of everything that comes from creation. There's been a straight line from Adam to Noah, from Noah to Avram, and only once is there something that goes out of the order of things. It's fascinating, even historically, how did this country get the name Palestine? Who gave this country the name Palestine, which was clearly taken from, it was taken from Plishtim. It was when Rome, Hadrian, who was one of the worst of the Roman Caesars, Hadrian crushed, in other words, most probably Hadrian gave orders, L'rasekotam. He gave orders to crush the Jews, L'rasek et kulam, to crush them all. He knew how to give orders. So Hadrian gave orders, and in those giving orders, he had this city completely completely plowed under, gave it a different name in the hope that the name Yerushalayim would be forgotten completely. He called it Ayla Capitolina. And what's fascinating, and this is brought in the encyclopedias and others, he wanted the name Judea or Eretz Yisrael completely forgotten, so he gave the country another name. He called it Palestina, from Plishtim. He gave it the name Palestina. What's fascinating is that he didn't give the place the name Canaan. You know, that would have been the more natural name to give, because that had the... I thought for a moment maybe he didn't know about it. Except I am certain that every one of these great tyrants always had somebody in charge of the Jewish desk. And anybody who was in charge of the Jewish desk would have told him that the name before it was Yehuda or Eretz Yisrael, it was Canaan, which would have been there is symbolism in the name given Plishtim. Because as the Vilna Gaon said more than 200 years ago, the purpose of Plishtim always is for one reason. Plishtim, I'll say again the sentence that was written by the Vilna Gaon. Plishtim heitzeru l'Yisrael b'ma'od yis. Plishtim are the ones who oppressed Israel much. V'lo hinichu lehem shum memshalah v'shilton. They did not permit them to have any kind of government or sovereignty. K'mo shekatuv, as it says. And here we have to take a look at anybody who goes through, beginning with the end of Shoftim, going through all of Shmuel. And then they're even going to appear later on in history in Yeshayahu and in Yirmiyahu. Fascinating to watch at what moment do they appear on the scene. How do we know that they are the ones that wanted to make sure that there would never be a government or sovereignty here? When Shaul is anointed by Shlomo to be by Shmuel, first king over Israel, it says v'chorosh lo yimatzei, in all of Israel there was no blacksmith. And if Jews wanted to sharpen their agricultural implements, they had to take them down to Plishtim and come back with a sharpened hoe and with a sharpened scythe. And therefore there were no implements of war, there were no weapons. And only Shaul and Yonatan, of all of Israel, only Shaul and Yonatan had swords. Understand? Nobody else had swords. Then Plishtim made certain that no government could ever be established in Eretz Yisrael. This was their purpose. And therefore they made sure that there were no weapons at all in all of Israel. Can you imagine? A country of millions of people who have two swords in the whole country, two swords. And it has been Hashemayim that the two swords are held by Shaul and Yonatan. Because they want to make certain that there will be no sovereign government here. When after the... So first of all, they were the ones with whom... Shimshon went to battle with them. They are the ones who destroy... They are the ones who destroy Nov and Givon and Shiloh. They're the ones who capture the Aron and take the Aron captive. In a sense, they want to take God captive. They want to take God captive. As soon as Shaul is anointed, it says, Uplishtim nesfu lehilachemim Yisrael. The moment that word comes that Shmuel is anointed, Shaul is king, it says, Uplishtim nesfu lehilachem. Plishtim gathered to wage war with Yisrael. Shloshim elef nechem. 30,000 chariots. V'sheshet alafim parashim. And 6,000 cavalry. Va'am kachol asher al svat hayam larov. And people like the grains of sand upon the seashore. Vayalu vayachanu b'michmash kidnat beit oven. They came up and they encamped in Michmash. Nebuch, we know exactly where Michmash is. That was Daniel Fry, Hashem Yinkom Damo. We know where Michmash is. Kidnat beit oven, to the east of beit oven. The Ish Yisrael ro, and the people of Israel saw Kitzarlo, how difficult it is for them. King Nigas Ha'am, the people were being oppressed by Plishtim. Vayitchabu, can you imagine what happened? Vayitchabu Ha'am b'ma'arot u'bachokhim u'baslayim u'batzvichim u'baborot. Jews hid in caves. They hid. And here we're talking about a massive army. Why? Because they heard that Shmuel had anointed Shaul, and nobody has weapons. And it's only miraculously that Shaul and Yonatan are able to wage war with Plishtim. Most of the wars that Shaul is going to wage is going to be with Plishtim. The 7 years that David was king in Hebron, you don't hear a thing from the Plishtim. As far as the Plishtim were concerned, David Melech in Hebron did not pose a challenge to them. But the moment that it says that David went from Hebron to Yerushalayim, in other words, until then, so David is the mayor of Hebron. He's some little local functionary. But when it says that when he went up to Yerushalayim, by Yishmu Plishtim ki mashu es David b'melech al Yisrael, when Plishtim heard that David had been anointed king over Israel, says the Radak over there, Kivan Shemolach al Kol Yisrael, when he became king over all of Israel, Holach al Yerushalayim, he went to Yerushalayim, Lilkot Metzudat Zion, in order to conquer Metzudat, the fortress of Zion. Lefisha Haita Kabbalah Etzlam, because they had the Kabbalah, they had received from all generations of Jews, Ki Zion Rosh Mamlechet Yisrael, because Zion is going to be the capital of Mamlech, of the kingdom of Israel. V'lo Yilkot Otah, the only one who's going to be able to conquer Yerushalayim is the person who's going to be Melech al Kol Yisrael. At the moment that David comes to Yerushalayim, the pasuk says, "Vayalu kol plishtim levakeisha David." Vayalu kol plishtim levakeisha David. All of Plishtim comes up to seek out David. Rashi says in Shmuel says something similar to the words of the Vilna Gaon. Lefisha plishtim hayomoshim kol hayamim at shebo shol v'David. The ones who ruled until Shaul and David came were the Plishtim. Kedichtiv b'Shimshon, as it says by Shimshon, by Yomru l'Shimshon, they said to Shimshon, Halo Yadato, the people of Yehuda said, don't get us into trouble with Plishtim, Halo Yadato, ki moshlim banu Plishtim, but you know that the Plishtim are the ones who rule over us, who rule over us. And therefore Rashi says that the 7 years that David was in Hebron, there was no movement of Plishtim against him. It's only when he comes to Yerushalayim. The Grog goes on to give us an insight into the psychology of Plishtim, the psychology of Plishtim, and he says the following, very fascinating, and I'll tell you, I understand Rashi now in a way that I never understood it before. The Vilna Gaon wrote, Plishtim heim avot haleitzim. Avot haleitzim, they are the father. In other words, like the mother of all leitzim, the father of leitzim. Leitzim. How are we going to? What word are we going to use? What word will we use to describe leitzim? Leitzim means clowns, jokesters. But that we're going to see that that's not going to be jesters, clowns, jokers, people who speak with two mouths. White man, you know, forked tongue. Scoffers, now we're getting closer. Scoffers. I'm going to come up with my own pshat in Leitzim. Leitzim means one who's not serious. Leitz is therefore one who says one thing, and he may mean something else. You cannot take what he says seriously. Right. Where does the one of the fascinating places where the word late appears? Very good. At the beginning of Parshas Toldos, and it was always a difficult Rashi to understand. It's a Chazal. Eile Toldot Yitzchak ben Avram. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram, Holidat Yitzchak, Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. Says Rashi the following. In other words, the problem is the pasuk simply repeats itself. Eila told us, these are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak. Listen, if Yitzchak is the son of Avram,
And I think that it's safe to say that Avram is the father of Yitzchak, right? Why does the pasuk have to repeat Avram is the father of Yitzchak? Says Rashi, Lefi shahayu leitzanei hador omrim, because the jokesters, the leitzanei hador said, Me Avimelech mis Avro Sora. Sora became pregnant through Avimelech. Sharei kam oshanim shahato im Avraham. So many years she lived with Avram and she didn't become pregnant from him. So Rashi goes on to say that what did the Rebbe Shem do? The Rebbe Shem made Yitzchak look precisely like Avram, like two tipot mayim, two drops of water. I mean, both a chip off the old block, precisely the same. But let's take a look at this for a moment. They said, Me Avimelech nisabro Sora. Sora became pregnant from Avimelech. Why? This is what they were saying. Why? Because she had been so many years with Avram, she never became pregnant. There's only one problem. The whole thing was, of course, a great lie, because remember, Avram did have children. Avram is not the one who's incapable of having children. The one who's incapable of having children is Sora. About Sora, it says, Sora akora, Sora zakora ein lavalan. Avram has proven that he can have children because he has children through Hagar. So what are they saying? They are saying, Me Avimelech nisabro Sora. Sora became pregnant from Avimelech. I understand this Rashi so much better now than I never understood. So what are you telling me? You're telling me that the Plishtim are saying a big lie. Doesn't make any sense, but it's a big lie. So what's the difficulty with believing that they're saying a big lie? That's precisely what they are. They'll say the big lie often enough until the man in the street is not even going to question it. They'll just lie and lie. But it's more than that. I'm going to go one step further. Why is it possible for them to think of such a lie? Because where did they come from? Where did Plishtim come from? They came from Kasluchim and Pasrusim. What they had learned was the big lie, and that you can get away with it. And take a look, you can get away with it to the extent that the Ribbono Shel Olam had to create Yitzchak to look precisely like Avram. Otherwise, the man in the street would have believed exactly what Plishtim was saying. The late means the one who lies. And the liar can be extremely dangerous. He can say one thing and mean something completely different. He can say one thing for public consumption and something completely different for his own people. Frightening the master of or maybe the one who invented the big lie was Plishtim. According to the Vilna Gaon, Vilna Gaon goes on, and basically what he's saying is, Plishtim does not have to represent a straight line of family, because the fact is that when Yeshayahu is going to talk about Plishtim, it's going to be a different Plishtim. It's not a genealogical term. The term Plishtim is a description of a certain force that exists in the world. And as Edom describes one force, and Moab is another force, Moab is a force of obscenity and depravity. Moab represents licentiousness. Edom represents simply the one who wants to cause extreme suffering, pain, and punishment to the Jewish people. And they've done it. They have done it. Plishtim, the Groz says, is something different. Plishtim has... they may not want to put Jews in concentration camps, but they want to make sure that Jews are not going to have memshalav shilton. And every time there is memshalav shilton, the moment the Jews begin to rise to a position of government and sovereignty, then Plishtim come into Plishtim, or the ones who follow them are going to come into play. And the weapon that they will use, I mean, it's amazing. These are the words of the Vilna Gaon. The weapon that they will use is the weapon of Litzanus, the big lie. And they'll get away with it unless they're stopped.
The Gra ends by saying, "Ushloshtan nemru b'shirat hayam," and these three are mentioned in Oz Yosher. Isn't that the pasuk we began with? Chil achaz yoshveit lashet, Oz nivhalu alufei Edom, Eilei Moav yochazem urad. Which is the one that's mentioned first? The one that's mentioned first, though Edom and Moab caused great suffering to the Jewish people, but the one who can be the most dangerous of all, Chil Achaz Yoshvei Plashet. Because when Yoshvei Plashet, the inhabitants of Plashet, see that Jews are marching toward Eretz Israel, and they are going to establish themselves here, this is something that Plishtim simply cannot tolerate. If anything, they seem to see it as their purpose to stop Jews from establishing themselves as a government and as a sovereign entity in this country. That's what Plishtim is all about. The Vilna Gaon didn't write this because he belonged to the Likud. The Rashbam didn't write what he wrote because he was an extreme right winger. Or sadly, yes, he wrote the Rashbam wrote this because this is how he sees Torah. This is what he sees is the pshat in the pasuk. And I pointed out earlier, just briefly, that even Rashi, who does not say that pshat here, at last count, I think, four or five different places in Chumash and Tanakh, Rashi is going to come back to the covenant that was entered into between Avimelech and Avraham, and that because of that covenant, Jews are simply restrained and they cannot do what they want. And it's only David, who it seems the period of the covenant is over, and therefore he now has the strength to conquer Yerushalayim. But before that, I mean, there is, of course, even a medrash that says that for Avram to get the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, he had to relinquish his rights to Har HaBayit for a certain number of generations. That's a different medrash. But over here, and I'll tell you the real truth. The real truth is that I prepared the shiur just really in order to show you how father, a grandfather, and grandson, how they look at a pasuk, and both of them are absolutely legitimate. Yes. I did want to tell you Torah that says that it's extremely a grave and dangerous issue, yes, to enter into treaties wherein there is a relinquishing of rights to Eretz Yisrael. Yes, I hold that. I believe that today, despite an assassin's bullet. My ideas of what's true and what's not true have not changed because of that. And therefore, When I was faced with the question, am I going to say this shiur today or not say this shiur today, I would have felt that not to say a shiur in Torah because of a tragic event that everybody had. Tragic. Nobody ever wanted a tragedy of this sort to occur. But I go back to what I said at the beginning. I hope that there will be the kind of calmer voices of, as almost said, the Hamaskil, the intelligent person, Ba'itahi, Edom, to remain silent. We have to remain silent. We have to look into ourselves. We have to take a look at the entire situation in its much broader ramifications. Yes, is there an ingredient of violence in this entire country? I mean, does it express itself on the roads? Does it express itself on the roads? Is violence something that is only the result of its only expression is a meshugner in Kikar Malchei Yisrael? Is there some kind of an element of violence in our entire community? And sort of, you know, every time I mean, it may sound like something small, but I don't think it's small. Every time I'm at a light and the light changes from red to green, all the honking, like move, like there's no patience. I feel a sense of violence being done to me. And if you're sort of like not precisely over on your side, and somebody wants to get by, there's an outburst of all sorts of little violences over here,
create a certain atmosphere. Yes, the atmosphere of verbal violence in the Knesset. We're not used to it. That's where, yes, that verbal violence that takes place in the Knesset. Don't blame the violence on the Dati, or the Dati Lumi, or Bar Ilan, or the Yeshivas, or as somebody said, anybody who studies Talmud. There's enough guilt to go around for everybody. But this is only part one. There's a great deal more. There's a great deal more that has to be said. And that great deal more will have to wait either for after the Shiva or after the Shloshim, when a people here are ready to sit down and talk with one another. I'm frightened out of my wits that they won't want to sit down with one another. And that will be the profoundest tragedy of all.